Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, March 19th, 2021. Federal health officials providing updated guidance on physical distancing in schools to prevent spread of the coronavirus, saying that students need to be only 3 feet apart rather than 6 feet apart, possibly leading to more schools returning to in-person learning instead of remote learning. U.S. House of Representatives passing a bill to prevent tens of billions of dollars in automatic Medicare spending cuts. We'll talk to a reporter with Fierce Healthcare about why the measure is needed and what may happen in the Senate, where Republican support will be needed for it to pass. President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris traveling to Atlanta to visit the CDC on the coronavirus response, and then to Emory University to meet with Asian American leaders following this week's deadly shooting at three Asian spas. And Democratic Congressman Jimmy Gomez introducing a resolution to expel Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene from Congress. Congressman Gomez says it's over her past remarks in support of violence against Democrats. One-third of the House Democrats co-sponsoring that resolution. From the Associated Press, students can safely sit just 3 feet apart in the classroom as long as they wear masks, but should be kept the usual 6 feet away from one another at sporting events, assemblies, lunch, or chorus practice. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said Friday in relaxing its COVID-19 guidelines, the revised recommendations represent a turn away from the 6 foot standard that has sharply limited how many students some schools can accommodate. Some places have had to remove desks, stagger schedules, and take other steps to keep children apart. That from AP. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky was at today's White House COVID-19 response team briefing.
Today, CDC is pleased to update our recommendations for physical distancing between students in classrooms in our K-12 operational strategy. Specifically, in elementary schools, CDC is now recommending that all students remain at least 6 feet apart in classrooms where everyone is wearing a mask, regardless of whether community COVID-19 risk is low, moderate, substantial, or high. In middle and high schools, CDC is also recommending that students be at least 3 feet apart in classrooms where everyone is wearing a mask and the community level of risk is low, moderate, or substantial. Because COVID-19 is spread more likely among older students, CDC recommends that middle and high school students should be at least 6 feet apart in communities where COVID-19 risk is high, unless cohorting is possible. Cohorting is when groups of students are kept together with the same peers and staff without close interaction with other groups or cohorts to reduce the risk of spread throughout the school. We recognize that cohorting is harder in high school students, but the science indicates that these students are also at higher risk of transmitting SARS-CoV-2. I want to emphasize that these recommendations are specific to students in classrooms with universal mask wearing. CDC continues to recommend at least 6 feet of distance between teachers and staff and other adults in the school buildings and between the adults and students. In common areas in the school, when masks cannot be worn, such as when eating, during activities such as singing, band practice, sports, exercise, and other activities that can increase exhalation, these activities should be moved outdoors or to large, well-ventilated spaces when possible. And 6 feet should also be used in community settings outside the classroom.
The CDC Director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky. More from the Associated Press on this new guidance. They write, still, the change at the CDC met with skepticism in some quarters. Randy Weingarten, president of the American Federation of Teachers, said the 1.6 million member union is reviewing the latest research, but we are concerned this change has been driven by a lack of physical space rather than the hard science and aerosol exposure and transmission. That from Randy Weingarten via AP. Also at today's White House briefing, response team coordinator Jeff Zients discussed the plans to loan millions of doses of coronavirus vaccine to Canada and Mexico.
Given our visibility into vaccine supply in the U.S., we're able to announce that we're lending a portion of our releasable AstraZeneca vaccines to Mexico and to Canada. Our approach to this wartime effort is to have as many tools in our toolkit as possible. Right now, we have three effective vaccines that went through a rigorous review process to be authorized by the FDA. We have other vaccines going through that process now, including one from AstraZeneca. As we await the results of these trials here in the US, many countries have already approved AstraZeneca, but need more supply. That includes Canada and Mexico. So balancing the need to let the approval process of the AstraZeneca vaccine take place here in the US with the importance of helping to stop the spread in other countries, we will loan a portion of our releasable AstraZeneca vaccine to Mexico and Canada. This action will allow our neighbors to meet a critical vaccination need in their countries, providing more protection immediately across the North American continent. In total, we will loan Mexico and Canada around 4 million doses. To be clear, this loan will not reduce the available supply of vaccines to Americans. The doses we are loaning are not approved for use in the United States. No American will be without a vaccine because of this action.
Jeff Zients with the White House COVID-19 response team at today's virtual briefing. And as he mentioned at the end, the AstraZeneca vaccine still awaiting approval for emergency use in the U.S. by the Food and Drug Administration. President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris traveling to CDC headquarters in Atlanta today, where staff told them about their concerns over coronavirus variants spreading throughout the country. President Biden told the staff a phrase that he's used before, thanking them, and science is back.
We owe you a gigantic debt of gratitude, and we will for a long, long, long time, because I hope this is the beginning of the end of not paying attention to what's going to come again and again and again and again. We can build all the walls we want. We can have the most powerful armies in the world. We can, but we cannot stop. We cannot stop these viruses, other than be aware where they are and move quickly on them when we find them. And the one thing that the reason I am so happy to have been able to, anyway, to have Doc here, is that science is back. No, all kidding aside, think about it. For the longest time, not just as it relates to CDC, but science was viewed as sort of an appendage to anything else we were talking about. Mm-hmm. But it's back. And I just want you to have some confidence that it's not only are the Vice President and I and the whole team and the whole COVID team writ large committed, but the American people have moved. Mm-hmm. The American people have moved. This is a bipartisan effort now. Now, it isn't showing itself in the way senators and congressmen vote, but the public, yep. We were talking about it on the airplane.
Yep.
The public, in a bipartisan way, when I came up with this $1.9 billion for this whole COVID and the economic relief side of it as well, we were told that it could never pass. We'd never get any help. Well, we didn't get any help in the Senate or the House. But you have 55% of the Republicans in America supporting it. You have 90-some percent of the Democrats, 80-some. The point is, the public is thankful to you.
President Joe Biden at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta, along with Vice President Harris and CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky. Today, the U.S. surpassed 100 million vaccinations administered, meeting the president's goal for his first 100 days on his 59th day in office. So today, the president suggested perhaps 200 million vaccinations as possible by day 100. A new poll finds 52% of all frontline healthcare workers say they've received at least their first dose of coronavirus vaccine. Poll coming from the Washington Post and the Kaiser Family Foundation. Back here in the U.S., the House taking up a bill dealing with that $1.9 trillion COVID aid package. The bill would prevent Medicare spending cuts that were triggered by that package. The issue is a law called PAYGO. That's short for Pay As You Go. House Budget Committee Chair Democrat John Yarmuth led the floor debate.
Because PAYGO requirements cannot be changed in reconciliation bills, we knew from the outset that this additional legislative fix was needed to avert painful and indiscriminate cuts to Medicare, farm supports, and other programs. The language of H.R. 1868 should look familiar. Over the past year, Congress has enacted multiple COVID relief packages to address the crises facing the American people and our economy. Each time, we excluded these bills from statutory PAYGO calculations because of the dire impact sequestration would have on our nation's seniors, students, farmers, and others. Today's bill will ensure the American Rescue Plan is treated the same as these previous relief measures and treated the same as the last reconciliation bill passed by Congress. That was in 2017 when Republicans used reconciliation to pass the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Following the bill's passage without Democratic support in either the House or Senate, Republicans proposed this same legislative fix, albeit buried in a problematic continuing resolution. Enough House and Senate Democrats joined Republicans to prevent harmful across-the-board cuts to the critical programs I mentioned, even though we oppose the short-term CR and the massive tax giveaways to the wealthy. This time, the situation has flipped, but the same nonetheless. House Republicans opposed the American Rescue Plan. I don't understand their position. This bill is supported by more than 70% of Americans and will directly benefit far more. But that's the choice they made. Either way, a statutory legislative fix for PAYGO is now needed, and historically, that has been enacted with little dispute.
The House Budget Committee Chair John Yarmuth on the House floor. He was followed by the committee's ranking Republican, Jason Smith.
We are here today because Democrats want to fix one of the many problems caused by President Biden and the House Democrats in the $1.9 trillion bailout. Those cuts to Medicare. And they want to do so by erasing almost $2 trillion in spending from the nation's books, pretending $2 trillion in spending is not going to happen. That, of course, serves two purposes for our Democrat colleagues. First, it avoids the immediate cuts which they caused and they chose to happen. And second, it gives them a clean slate on which they are reportedly already planning to add trillions more in spending in the months to come. Given all of this, I would ask my colleagues to move forward with a much better approach, one that stops their Medicare cuts and does so in a more responsible way. Let's work together to protect seniors and cut waste from their bailout bill. The American people clearly want this to happen. Stopping billions in benefits and payments to prisoners and illegal immigrants. Billions in payments to prisoners and illegal immigrants. Stopping funds they recklessly jammed into the bailout for the National Endowment of the Arts, the National Endowment for the Humanities. Stopping special handouts to federal employees. Rescinding billions in bailouts that go to state governments who do not need it and reward their continued lockdowns. Put people before politics.
Congressman Jason Smith, ranking Republican on the Budget Committee. The House passed this bill by a vote of 246 to 175, voting yes, every Democrat and 29 Republicans. And joining us now with more is Robert King, reporter with Fierce Healthcare. Thanks so much for doing this. Can you start off by explaining why was this bill needed to prevent cuts to Medicare spending?
Hi, thanks for having me on. So this bill is essentially an extension of a moratorium that was implemented as part of the CARES Act to a 2% cut to Medicare payments that were installed all the way back in 2013 as part of the sequester. The CARES Act initially put a pause on those cuts, but only until the end of the year, until the end of 2020. And then the late December spending package did another pause to those cuts until the end of March. And now this bill would extend them again for another 9 months.
How big are the potential cuts to Medicare?
Well, this is a 2% cut to all Medicare claims. So it's a major, major ask for healthcare provider lobbies. So thinking of hospitals, doctors, you know, these groups have been hit pretty hard financially by the COVID-19 pandemic, especially physician practices, which have been, you know, had to deal with major drops in patient volumes. So basically what, you know, kind of provider industries have been looking for is any type of relief or help to kind of buttress up and kind of shoulder, you know, kind of help finances for these industries, essentially. And so this is part of a larger trend of these lobbying groups hoping to kind of, you know, give some more financial help to providers.
Now, the bill that passed the House today passed with a simple majority vote, and they pointed out that the reason they had to do this separately was because the last COVID aid bill was done through a process called budget reconciliation where they couldn't include it. Well, when it reaches the Senate, they did budget reconciliation so they could get around a filibuster. The bill that passed the House today will be subject to a filibuster. What's going to happen when it hits the Senate?
Yes, and that's a good point. They are going to need 60 votes for this to pass the Senate. I would be more confident, though, that this type of provision could pass in the Senate because, you know, hospital relief has gotten strong bipartisan support before. The CARES Act included a $175 billion provider relief fund for hospitals and for other providers. So, you know, kind of the provider industry has a lot of bipartisan backing. And since this isn't really tied to any other controversial provisions like the $1.9 trillion package, the American Rescue Plan Act, I believe it's more likely to garner enough support for passage. The question is, can the Senate pass it in time? As I said before, the cuts go back into effect on March 31st. After March 31st, I mean.
And do you know this PAYGO law, has it ever kicked in over the years, or is it always being waived?
It's always being waived, and that's another provision in this. The American Rescue Plan Act would have actually triggered an additional 4% cut to go into effect for Medicare payments in 2022. But the bill also kind of helps protect providers by avoiding that PAYGO cut from going into effect for next year. But it was kind of triggered because of the budgetary impact that Democrats used via reconciliation. So, but yeah, usually these types of cuts have been waived because they generally have strong bipartisan support.
And finally, you write for a publication called Fierce Healthcare. What is that, and how did it get its name?
Sure. So Fierce is part of a kind of an umbrella of news services that cover different facets of the healthcare industry. There's a Fierce Pharma and a Fierce Biotech. Fierce Healthcare, we cover any type of business and regulatory and policy issues facing the healthcare industry. So primarily the health insurers, doctors, hospitals, kind of everything on that end. So we cover a lot of, you know, not only regulatory, but also business issues that are kind of facing that issue and that industry. And so this has been an issue that has been lobbied for very heavily by, you know, a lot of providers. That's why it's very important for them.
Reporter Robert King, thank you very much.
Thank you.
On Wall Street, the Dow was down 234, NASDAQ up 99, S&P down 2. The Federal Reserve announcing it's going to allow a temporary reduction in capital requirements for major banks to expire, but will consider future changes to prevent dysfunction in financial markets. Another milestone in travel, the Transportation Security Administration says over 1 million people went through U.S. airports for 8 straight days. That's a record since the start of the coronavirus pandemic. And today, most Supreme Court justices meeting in Washington in person. First time in more than a year that's happened. The court says all 9 justices are fully vaccinated against the coronavirus. Washington Today continues in a minute. Welcome back to Washington Today. A few more headlines. Donald Trump Jr. sharing an edited video showing his father, former President Trump, knocking down President Joe Biden with a golf ball. The caption reading, "It wasn't the wind, folks." The clip includes footage of President Biden today going up the stairs of Air Force One, stumbling twice. The White House says it was the wind, and President Biden is 100% fine. White House responding to a Daily Beast article reporting that dozens of young White House staffers have been suspended, asked to resign, or placed in a remote work program because they admitted using marijuana in the past. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki saying only five people have fully lost their jobs. President Biden formally nominating Bill Nelson, former astronaut and former Democratic U.S. Senator from Florida, to lead NASA. Republican Senator Marco Rubio, also from Florida, saying, "I can't think of anyone better to lead NASA than Bill Nelson." And the United Nations releasing its annual International Happiness Report. Finland named the happiest country in the world for the fourth year in a row. Number two is Iceland, followed by Denmark, Switzerland, and the Netherlands. The U.S. comes in number 14. All eight people killed Tuesday in the string of attacks at three Atlanta-area spas have now been publicly identified. The names of the four victims at the two spas in Atlanta released today, joining four victims at a spa about 30 miles north. Six of the victims of Asian descent, including four who were Korean. One suspect is in custody. Officials say it's too early to determine if the shootings were a hate crime. President Biden and Vice President Harris traveling to Emory University in Atlanta to meet with local elected officials and Asian American leaders. On the flight down on Air Force One, White House Principal Deputy Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre taking a reporter's question.
Could you give us a little more about today's events, in particular the president's message to the Asian American community, many of whom have expressed real fears about a rise in hate crimes and who have expressed frustration that this one has not been categorized as a hate crime, that other incidents have not as well. What is he going to say to them, and does he believe that more should be done to classify these as bias incidents?
As you know, he's going to meet with the Asian American Pacific Islander, do a meeting with the local electeds. So he'll have a conversation there. And I think there, he's going to hear from them about the impact of this violent incident that we saw just a couple days ago, as you all know, in the community. And more broadly, their perspective on the rise in anti-Asian hate incidents. The president will offer his support to the community in Georgia and across the country, and highlight his commitment to combating xenophobia, intolerance, and hate, as well as establishment in his executive order that he actually announced on January 26th. The president, you know, he understands. He understands and knows the past year that the community has been vilified, they've been scapegoated, and they've been attacked. And so he is going to speak. He spoke to the nation, as we know, last week. He made sure that in his remarks, he lifted up the anti-AAPI hate that they have seen the past year, and he called it out. And so this is what he will continue to do, continue to make sure that he's talking to the, to make sure that he's communicating that to the community. And not only that, as I was talking about the executive order, in that executive order, he directed the DOJ to do everything that they can to end this violence and protect the community. And so they have been doing that. The DOJ has started doing listening sessions with the community on this issue. And also HHS was part of that executive order. We just confirmed the secretary there, so we will see more action coming from them as well.
The White House Principal Deputy Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre speaking with reporters on Air Force One as the president and vice president flew down to Atlanta. President Biden today also calling on Congress to swiftly pass the COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act, expediting the federal government's response to the recent violent acts against the Asian community in the U.S. And today, the church that shooting suspect Robert Long belongs to, Crabapple First Baptist, condemning his alleged actions, calling the killings an extreme and wicked act. This from CNN. Democratic Congressman Jimmy Gomez of California formally introducing a resolution Friday to expel Georgia Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene from Congress, suggesting that she advocated violence against our peers, the Speaker, and our government. Here's Congressman Gomez on the House floor.
I believe some of my Republican colleagues, and one in particular, wish harm upon this legislative body. And I'm not saying this for shock value. It's the conclusion I drew after a member of Congress advocated violence against our peers, the Speaker, and our government. It is what I believed after this chamber was turned into a crime scene just 10 weeks ago. It's how many of us felt sheltering in this room as the Capitol was breached. Some members called their loved ones to say goodbye. Others prayed to their God. And I asked myself if this would be the day our democracy die. I take no joy in introducing this resolution, but any member who incites political violence and threatens our lives must be expelled. And I'll do everything I can in my power to protect our democracy and keep all my colleagues safe.
Congressman Jimmy Gomez, Democrat on the House floor. Under the U.S. Constitution, the House has the power to expel any member with a two-thirds vote. The subject of Congressman Gomez's resolution, Democratic Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, was on Steve Bannon's podcast Friday morning.
Now is it trying to throw you out of the entire Congress? Is that what today's game is? What game are we playing today?
Well, I think it's time for everyone to catch up that we're under a communist revolution. And I'll tell you what's going on. I've been one of the only people standing firm and refusing to back down. I'm a person, I have never broken a law. I've never used drugs. I've never had a DUI. I've paid my taxes. I've never done anything wrong. I said a few offensive things on social media some years back in which I have publicly denounced and apologized for. But today, Democrats, with over 70 of them, introduced a resolution to have me expelled from Congress. But I want to tell you, this should infuriate.
On what grounds?
Words on Facebook a few years ago.
Is that what they're actually saying in the resolution?
Yes. Yes.
The resolution is because of
things I've said in the past, typed and maybe liked on social media. Not as a congresswoman, as a regular private citizen, and then I stood before the entire world and said, I denounced that, I shouldn't have said these things, I apologized. I said, but I am who I am, standing firm in my conservative Christian values, but the Democrats are still moving forward and trying to expel me from Congress. But let's really nail this out. Let's nail this out. We have Maxine Waters, as a sitting congresswoman, stood in front of a crowd and called for Trump supporters to be attacked. We have Ilhan Omar, who married her brother, shared the Minnesota Freedom Fund bail bond link to have criminals bailed out of jail, asking for money to be donated to bail out BLM, Antifa rioters, criminals that attack police officers.
Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, part of her appearance on the War Room Pandemic podcast hosted by Steve Bannon, former advisor to President Donald Trump. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said that this resolution to expel Congresswoman Taylor Greene is not a leadership position. About one-third, though, of the House Democrats are co-sponsoring it. And the U.S. House Thursday night voted to table or kill a resolution offered by Republican leader Kevin McCarthy to remove Democratic Congressman Eric Swalwell from the Intelligence Committee because McCarthy says a Chinese spy fundraised for Eric Swalwell in 2014 and placed an intern in his office, compromising him. The vote was 218 Democrats voting to table the resolution, 200 Republicans voting to consider it. Three Republicans voted present. President Biden says he's proud of Secretary of State Antony Blinken after a confrontational encounter with Chinese officials during a meeting in Alaska. Blinken raising the issues of human rights involving the Uyghurs, also Hong Kong, Taiwan, cyber attacks on the U.S., and as Blinken put it, economic coercion toward our allies. Chinese officials responding in kind, criticizing how the U.S. uses its military and economic power, and referencing the Black Lives Matter protests. State Department Deputy Spokeswoman Jolena Porter asked about it on a teleconference today.
Obviously, there's been a lot of reporting since yesterday about how sort of tense the initial encounter was. And, you know, there's been discussions of, I think both sides have accused the other of breaking protocol in those initial exchanges. But I wonder if, you know, does the State Department, based on the tone of that first meeting, does that, you know, does that give you any concern for the future of the relationship with China and the possibility of reaching some agreements or, you know, getting some achievables out of these meetings. Thank you.
Thank you for your question, Simon. And just as a response to that, of course, as you know, Secretary Blinken and NSA Sullivan had their first meetings with Director Yang Jae-chul and State Counselor Wang Yi, and of course are in sessions this morning. And these were serious discussions. Again, I'll just reiterate something that NSA Sullivan said. And of course, to your point about it, you know, the being contentious or not, again, that he said we don't see conflict, but of course welcome stiff competition. Again, this was a single meeting. And again, we know that sometimes these diplomatic presentations can be exaggerated or maybe even aimed at a domestic audience, but we're not letting the theatrics from the other side stop us from doing what we were intending to do in Alaska, which is lay out our principles as well as our expectations and have these tough conversations early that we need to have with the PRC.
State Department Deputy Spokeswoman Jelena Porter on a teleconference. Well, thanks for being with us today on Washington Today, available as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and download the free C-SPAN Radio app to listen anywhere. Hope you have a good evening and weekend.